the proud mom of a just graduated from Jackson State University, my daughter.
Congratulations.
So she's 22 and she just graduated, and I'm so proud of her. And she's excited about starting her career path here. She's excited, which made me get even more excited. She was like, Mom, Rhode Island is really like the spot. I also have a 19-year-old who just finished her freshman year at Fisk University in Nashville. She's a vocal artist, an extremely talented artist. And then my son will be finishing his junior year in high school, so he'll be starting as his senior year here in Providence. And he was like, Mom, Brown University is there.
What did your older daughter major in?
She majored in psychology.
Oh, okay.
And she's hoping to do forensic psychology. But she hasn't given up the idea of perhaps becoming a psychiatrist. So she's just very interested in the mind and how people make decisions and how they heal when they go through traumatic experiences. Mm. So she's a gifted young lady, and I'm really excited for her future.
Talk about your background.
I was very fortunate to do one of my undergraduate internships with the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services. My first one was with the Illinois Secretary of State Police. But when I was doing my internship with the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services, when people ask me, well, how did you know you wanted to go on a social worker? How did you choose it? I'm like, I didn't choose it. It chose me. And so that undergraduate internship, I was very fortunate that right after I graduated from college, which was a few months after that internship ended, I was able to actually get hired to work for the state.
And as a social worker?
As a social worker.
Okay, so that's really your lineage or your blood.
I began as a social worker, but as I've shared with others, I was brought up in a home of by a woman who to me is the epitome of what social worker is, my grandmother. I didn't know it growing up that, you know, the people she was feeding or the kids she was keeping, it was her way of helping other people. It was not formalized. It was just, you know, growing up in the church, helping each other. So my grandmother did so much to help as many people as she could, because she herself, she maybe had a second grade education. Grew up down south in Mississippi. She knew how much people had helped her to be able to get to where she was in terms of just raising a healthy family. So I grew up watching her and idolizing her, and she was definitely my best friend. So when, as I journeyed into social work, I recognized that actually that had been embedded in me really my entire life. My grandmother was extremely involved in all of her grandchildren's lives. So Every weekend, all of our parents had the weekend off because everybody went to grandma's house. And it was a lot of us, easily 20 plus. And we just spent from Friday to after church on Sunday with my grandmother. It kept us as kids just knowing each other and being close with each other, because I'm an only child, but I never knew what being an only child really was, because I was very close with my cousins and still to this day. But my grandmother had us every weekend, and in the summer I was with her until I turned about 16 and started working. I was with my grandma every day.
Was this your maternal or paternal?
My maternal
grandma. And is she alive or is she?
She passed away in 1990, right before I graduated. Okay. But what she kept telling me is, if you really want to make a difference, you need to help people. If you're not helping people in whatever profession you choose that pays you a salary, if you're not helping people in it, whether it's in that job or conjoined with that job, you're just not fulfilling your purpose, what you put on this earth to do. And although I'm the only one who formally went into social work, my cousins are all really the same. And it's, for us, it's very centric to church. I have several pastors, cousins who are over Praise Dance Ministries. But the big piece is when they are working in church, they're helping kids. They're right. helping uplift somebody who feels like they don't know how they're going to make it through. So for me, social work, it chose me. It just was what I was put on this earth to do. So I started in Illinois as a social worker. They call it a child welfare specialist. And then after a few years, I became a child protection investigator. And the main reason I chose to do that was I saw a lot of cases coming my way that I felt if that investigator would have, instead of investigating, try to help. Like, what do you need? Do you really need an open case, or do you need a referral to get food, to get into a place, to get counseling? I didn't see that was happening, so I'm like, you know, I'm taking my skill set for social work and I'm going to do investigations. And the only time a child may enter our system is when it's absolutely necessary, because I'm going to do everything possible to avoid that, but to ensure that everybody's safe, because you don't sacrifice safety. But there are different ways to achieve that versus out-of-home placement. So I was an investigator for, oh my God, more years than I want to count perhaps, but 6+ years. And then, and I specifically also began to investigate what Illinois calls serious harms cases. So that's sex abuse, head injury, torture, death, those really significant types of abuse. And then I became Illinois sent me back to school to get my master's. And
where did you get your master's?
At Chicago State University.
What was that in?
It's a master's of arts that's in counseling and at psychology. Right after I finished with that degree, I was promoted to be a supervisor. And supervising for me was easier than it was for others, because my staff all knew I had already spent like a decade doing direct service. So they we were able to really talk about and completely staff cases, not just giving tasks to do, but let's talk about the family, let's talk about the dynamics, let's talk about, are you okay, because you've had some difficult cases and you've had things happen, how are you feeling? So just knowing how they must feel, because I was there at one time as a worker. And after that, I was a manager. So I was over the supervisors who supervised the workers. And I was given a great opportunity to also be the training manager for the state, where I helped develop the training curriculum for all of our direct service staff. And I also was the manager that consulted on all high profile cases. And that's what led me for just a couple of years to leave the state, because I had been consulting with then Francis Cardinal George, the Archbishop. I had been consulting because around that time was when a lot of the clerk misconduct cases came to be known in Illinois. And I had been meeting with him and his staff pretty regularly. And when I went to meet with him one day, he said, "Can you come and work for me? I'm the president of the United States Conference for Catholic Bishops, and I don't get to tell people what to do, but can you come and just help me understand?" And I was like, first thing I said was, "I'm Baptist." He was like, "It's not about your religious affiliation. It's about you helping us to understand." And he was an amazing man of God to work with, because he was committed to ensuring that children were safe. And actually, what I found was the staff for the Archdiocese of Chicago, or better yet, let me say, from the priests to the vicars to the religious women to the schools, they actually took my direction quicker and easier because I was not of them. And I got very little pushback on what I was suggesting be rolled out. And I worked there and in South Africa for the Oprah Winfrey Leadership Foundation for that time frame that I was away from the state. But then I went back home to the state of Illinois, to the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services, to roll out, I don't know if you all are familiar with differential response. It's an alternative pathway to investigations. Not everything requires investigation. Like, if you don't have food, do you need an investigation, or do you need more so help? So I was asked to come back to lead that work. And also I eventually became deputy chief for the state, for child protection. And I enjoyed my now thinking about it, 24-ish years there. I was asked to come and lead the Children and Family Services Division in Ramsey County, Minnesota. And I decided to do it. It was a hard decision as it related to me leaving my family, because I have a huge, big, very connected to one another family.
And you're from Chicago.
I am from Chicago.
When you talk about your grandmother and your background in Chicago.
From Chicago, Illinois. And particularly the neighborhood is Inglewood.
Okay.
Sort of as you all have so many names for your areas in Providence, we have an equal number of names for our areas in the Chicagoland area. We have Inglewood and Chatham and Roseland and Hyde Park. Everyone knows Hyde Park because that's where Obama's house is, as well as the University of Chicago. I went to Minnesota, me and my three kids, and one of the things that really attracted me was the ability to move their system forward. They were sort of stuck. So I went to Minnesota. And I was, for the first 3 years there, well, maybe about 2 3/4, I was the division director for Children and Family Services. So in network, from child protection to adoptions, to case management of child protection cases, foster care, as well as child care licensing, and all children's mental health work falls under that umbrella. And I did that for almost 3 years, and it was extremely fulfilling. And I was asked to, if I was interested in becoming the department director, which meant that I would have children's reporting up to me, but I now would take over adult mental health, adult crisis, our detox center and chemical health, as Minnesota calls it, center. And case management for detoxification and chemical health needs, and also our disability services, aging services, all of the waiver world in terms of the different type of waivers that families can obtain, whether it be for brain injury, elderly, it's about 15 or so waivers. And also in that world is adult protection. So it put all of the services primarily that a child or an adult could be in need of that is not specific to financial assistance falls under the Social Services Department for Ramsey County. It's the largest department in that county, and it's, in my opinion, the most fulfilling work in terms of working with our adults and children with mental health needs, chemical health needs. A lot of people don't think about chemical health in children. There are children who are in need of those services, and for whatever reasons, we want to say they have to wait till they're 18 to get them. You know, so that was something that was very important to me, to ensure that we were providing that to all. So that's the long version of my career.
Realizing that you haven't even started the job and there's a whole lot that you have to learn, but sort of philosophically in general, what are your ambitions for taking over this department, which, as you know, has a number of different divisions, mm-hmm. from behavioral health to the true Department of Health and DCYF?
You know, first and foremost to me, what's very important is ensuring that Rhode Islanders, all that their voice is heard. So it's very important to me to have community voice as well as our provider community at the table as we are looking at what we would like to do, what we are going to do, and having them to help us structure. So community voice is very important to me, as well as moving forward health and the health and racial disparities. Looking at that and saying, okay, this is what we've done, now how do we go further? Looking at those social determinants of health, those social determinants in general. And so what I'm hoping and what I'm thinking is for that to really be centric to how we move forward our work. Because for me, looking at it that way is much bigger than many would think when you start to pick it apart. Wherever I've gone, what I've done first and foremost is said, I'm not trying to hit the ground running. I'm trying to hit the ground with listening, understanding, asking questions, and doing my best to give everybody a voice. Now, it doesn't mean it's gonna turn out like everybody wants, but If you don't listen, how can you say you know what your residents need? And then if you don't allow residents and community providers who are rooted right there in our communities to sit at the table and help us design, instead of saying, this is what I'm gonna do, here you go. No, come in at the beginning. And there are certain things, yes, we're tied to federal and state statutes and mandates about, but how we roll them out is usually discussionable. It's yet, we must A, but we have, but it's not in the statute how we do A, so let's sit together and talk this out. So I wanna hit the ground listening, understanding, and learning.
Will you have any public meetings with people? I mean, obviously you're gonna meet with people in the various departments and throughout state government, but in terms of the community itself, have you given any thought to, I'm gonna go to South Providence on such and such a night and come on in and talk to me?
Well, two things. I know next week and when I'm in town, I'm gonna be at some of our entities within the communities, just getting to meet and know some people.
Okay.
However, I think what, to me, it's very important to have, for lack of a better phrase, listening sessions. You know, listening sessions, community forums. And I'll be relying on our staff here in the governor's office to help me understand how we do that, how we can do that.
What the format for
that
is.
What the format is.
But you will be reaching out, obviously.
Yes, yes, that's
very important. You're not gonna wait for people to call you.
I'm not gonna wait for people to call me, but I do know as people call me, I have to interject the calls into the doing.
Yeah.
So I don't want people to think they can't call, they have to wait for me to come out. I still want that to happen, but I really wanna look at what is that plan to really be in the community? How do I do that respectfully? And how do I ensure that the residents, all that they know that their voices really matter? Their voices really matter. That is who we are here to serve. But you know, what sometimes we forget in government is when we fail to really explain to community the reasons of why, there's a belief that we don't want to hear anything. But when we can explain, here's what we have to do, and this is what we're being told we must do in order to access certain fundings or streams or what have you, whether it's from the federal level or whatnot, when we don't even share that, it leads to distrust within the community. So we need to be able to have good conversations. And to also be very clear, I will not make everybody happy all of the time, but I wanna hear and understand and know what's happening. And I wanna be invited. I wanna be invited and not just saying, we'll create the opportunity. Also invite me, because coming to your meeting may be that opportunity versus me trying to figure out how do I get it arranged for me to, I'll just use the community I'm moving to. I wanna hear about what's happening in the Elmhurst community, what their concerns are, what they want, what they need. Well, maybe there's already an organization there who just simply on a Saturday or Sunday when they have an event, I can come, I can be there, and I can listen and I can learn. Let's say if it's about chemical addiction. To think, to believe that you only look at that moment when that person has presented and you only address that, what they're sharing with you, their need is about. You know, you're missing a lot. This, you need to first of all recognize this is a human being and life is very complicated. And as they're trying to seek treatment, they also have other events happening. And it's not usually even just them. What about their children, their parents, their aunties, their uncles? You have to look at that family unit, who that person sees as their safety net. Who's your safety net? They may say, I don't have one. Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk, as you were growing up, let's talk about this. And as you talk it through with them, you will learn so much and you will see that in addition to that treatment piece, if you don't also look at, let's say they identified their mom had mental health concerns or their brother is bipolar, this has impacted them. Those are trauma pieces for that individual. And also they themselves may have or are experiencing mental health concerns, but you've only been talking about the fact that they're addicted to Vicodin. Or you think you only need to treat that, or you think you just need to get them on insurance, there are other pieces. You may learn that their children right now are having some difficulties in school. Well, if you don't look at what you can create or put in place to help them with that, you may now meet them on the DCYF piece, because now they're trying to parent as a sober parent. That's different than parenting when you weren't. So you just can't look at that one little sliver, that one moment. And that's something that we often forget. And I just don't want that to be something that I ever forget, or I don't keep emphasizing. I'm not press phobic. That's not a real phrase, I made it up. I wanna talk. I wanna be able to have those dialogues, because guess what? As I'm meeting with you one day, you may bring something to my attention and I'm like, oh wow, okay, I didn't know that, or I didn't understand that. So, I want to be as transparent as I possibly can all of the time.